Well, it's been a challenging few weeks for Irish agriculture, from nitrates and water quality to Fran McNulty's revelations on Monday night's RTE Investigates about dairy calf welfare. Frank O'Mara, the head of Chagas, came in to talk about these issues. I put it to him that the latest figures from the EPA, that emissions from agriculture are down by 1.2% from the previous year, driven by a 14% reduction in fertiliser use, is very welcome news.
Absolutely. Look, for me, it's a momentum shift. And I'm really delighted for farmers, in particular those that have been doing things over the last number of years to reduce their emissions, that we are seeing the results of that now in the figures. And while 1.2%, it's relatively modest, I think if we can keep building on that year on year, we can get to the target that's set for the sector.
I mean, we know that that is driven by the Ukraine war and the increase in the price of fertiliser.
Look, that's obviously a big driver, but also I suppose we have been talking to farmers and involved a lot in terms of pushing things like clover and the use of low emission slurry spreading. And the benefit from those type of technologies is that farmers can use less chemical nitrogen. So we'd like to think that there's some element of that farmers actually taking active steps to reduce their chemical nitrogen, as well as obviously the price having a big impact on usage last year. The price will, unlikely, you know, that will change over time. So we really have to try to get the practices that can reduce chemical nitrogen use into widespread use on farms. And that's things like your clover, multi-species swards, your low emission slurry spreading, liming, actually a big increase in liming in 2022 as well. And again, that allows farmers to use less chemical nitrogen and still get the same grass production.
Are you disappointed in any way that it is offset, according to the EPA, by dairy cow numbers, which continue to increase, as do methane emissions, as do carbon dioxide emissions?
Yeah. So look, when you look into the figures in the inventory, the downward figure is the nitrous oxide emissions from fertiliser. Mm. The methane emissions from livestock are actually almost stable, completely stable. So that encompassed a bit of an increase from dairy cows and a bit of a reduction from suckler cows. So for the last couple of years, you know, we've been doing things to reduce emissions, but I suppose the cattle herd has probably still been expanding a little bit, and we're at a point of change there. So I think we will see more impact of the things that farmers do to reduce emissions coming through into the inventory over the coming years.
You talk about the cattle herd, not the dairy cow numbers.
Yeah, so the projections we put out are that dairy cow numbers will continue to rise, but at a much slower rate than we've seen over the last number of years. And the suckler cow herd will continue to fall, as we have seen over the last couple of years. And that will, the overall number of cows will go down and the size of the cattle herd will go down. Now, look,
do you think that gives a just transition for suckler farmers listening, particularly in the West, who'll be listening to that and thinking, why should we pay for what's happening in the dairy cow numbers?
Well, look, I suppose there's nobody forcing anybody to change enterprise. There's nobody forcing people to get into dairy, or nobody forcing people to get out of sucklers. These are just the trends that we have seen over the last couple of years, and our best estimate is that they're likely to continue. It's not a kind of a one part of the industry versus the other.
You recently published the third assessment of how agriculture can reduce emissions, this MAC curve, as you talk about. This is going to entail, is it not, complete and urgent uptake by all farmers across all measures. Is that realistic?
What we published last Wednesday was our third MAC, as you call it, or MAC 2023, which is an analysis of what the various things that farmers can do, what can they achieve. We're shown that, you know, with the range of measures that we currently have, and yes, with very high levels of adoption of those measures, we can actually get to a 25% reduction by 2030 and keep within the carbon budgets. So look,
but this is all hands on deck. Is that realistic?
The experience is that farmers do actually change when things make sense for them. Certainly there's going to be a challenge in adoption, and there's a huge role for Chagas, I suppose, to support farmers in that adoption. As you probably know, we've put in place the Signpost Programme over the last 2 years. That's a network of 120 demonstration farms around the country. And that's brilliant. You know, we can bring farmers to walks on those farms, show them best practice. But really, you know, when farmers go home, that's when, I suppose, you know, we really have to follow up and help them, because otherwise they leave the handout in the Jeep and 6 months later they're throwing it out and it's gone curly from the sun. So the plan now is that we will offer farmers a free service where they can come to us and we will help them them on their farm develop a plan that can reduce their emissions. And we hope to roll that out to 50,000 farmers over the next 5 years.
I want to move on to dairy calf welfare and Fran McNulty's Primetime Investigates last week, which showed serious breaches of dairy calf welfare, abuses that were described by the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar as repugnant. Dr. Pat Dillon from Moorpark Chagas told me in 2019 that Chagas didn't consider bull calves as were an issue when expansion was being planned in 2010. Was that not a major failing by Chagas?
So, look, just to go back to the programme, absolutely there were some scenes in that that nobody could condone, and they were totally unacceptable. And look, I very much support the investigation that the department is taking, albeit, you know, everybody deserves due process in an investigation like that. So, look, you know...
How could you not have considered... What would have happened to these male calves?
I think before quotas were eliminated, Ella, we had started actually to act on that issue. Obviously, every calf, no matter when it's born or where it's born, should be treated well. The issue is, how can we structure the industry so that any calf born from a dairy herd has value as a beef calf?
That's really what we want to get to. Can I just ask you to get back to the question, which is, how is it possible that during the expansion... and the planning that you made, that you didn't consider, as Pat said, this issue?
Well, I think what Pat was referring to back in the early days of planning for the elimination of quotas, people were worried about where would the processing capacity come from for the milk? Where would the actual cows, the extra cows, how would we scale up the number of cows? But certainly before quotas were eliminated, we knew that we were going to have an increase in the number of male dairy calves and that we needed to start working on that. So in 2013, we started working on sex semen, which is probably the best way to eliminate these low-value male dairy calves. But we also put in place a programme then to support farmers who wanted to get into rearing calves.
Sorry to interrupt you, but why not just get honest here and favour the euthanasia of male calves? Because that, according to the welfare scientists I've spoken to down the years, is the most humane option. Rather than putting them on ships for live export, where the welfare problems actually emerge.
Yeah, well, look, I think it's a far better option if we can create a calf that there's a demand for and rear that calf here in this country predominantly. Now, look, live exports have been a feature of our trade, live exports of calves for as long as I can remember, and just had a look at some of the figures recently. And back in 2010, long before quota elimination, we exported 150,000 calves. So it's not that I think there's anything wrong in theory with live exports. If it's done right and if the treatment of the calves is right on that, you know, it is a viable market for our calves. And there is a strong market for Irish calves abroad because generally they're found to be good calves. But as I said, let's try and get to a situation where we have a demand for those calves at home from our own beef farmers because they see value in those calves. And that's where I suppose things like sex semen, I think, have a big role to play. But there's other things as well that have been done, Ellen, in the industry, not just by Chagas, but like the Dairy Beef Index has been brought in a number of years ago. That's a collaboration between ICBF and ourselves to improve the beef merit of beef cross calves in the dairy herd. We've also last year brought in the commercial beef value, which for every calf coming through a mart or wherever, now you can get a value of that calf for beef. And that's going to be greatly aided this year by the genotyping programme, which has been rolled out. So all these things are happening. And like they didn't just happen last week or last month or last year. There's a lot of work gone in over the last decade, actually, to enable all these things to be put in place. So, you know, there's no point, I suppose, looking back and saying we should have done more. We actually, I think, did quite a bit over the last decade. Things do take time. But I think we're in a much better place now because of the things we did over the last decade than if we were only starting to do those things now.
I just wonder, though, that farmers are at the front line of all of this. They have to live in their communities with their neighbours watching Primetime Investigates, wondering what on earth is going on. It doesn't seem to be considered in a way that was effective. You know, that there needs to be at some stage, surely, some sort of accountability.
Well, look, I suppose, if whatever people wish in terms of accountability or looking backwards, but it won't get us very far in terms of finding solutions to this. And I think we are making progress. You know, when you look at the number of male dairy calves that are actually being born, the numbers are going down. They're down. I think about maybe 30,000 in the last couple of years. I think the beef merit of the calves coming from the dairy herd is going up. But we do have a job of work to do, you know, to I suppose, get the message out to farmers, beef farmers, other farmers, that there's actually a viable enterprise here in rearing calves coming from the dairy herd. And look, there's a very active programme going on, the Dairy Beef 500 programme. It's the successor to the Green Acres programme, as I said, that started in 2015. So it's not today or yesterday, Ella, I suppose, that this issue has been addressed, not just by Chagas, but by others in the industry as well.
Can we turn to water quality now? I have spent the week reading reports from Chagas archive reports going back to 1998. What is crystal clear from some of the very interesting research that Chagas researchers have done in the past is that they said repeatedly and publicly that too much nutrients causes water pollution and that the intensification of agriculture would cause serious problems, that your research identified the link between cattle intensification and water pollution. Why then did you support the derogation? We see now farmers out panicking, understandably, about their own futures out in the streets of Bandon during the week. And yet your researchers told you decades ago that this was the problem and it was going to happen.
Because, look, there's a very strong reason why we would want to have a derogation in this country. Number one, it helps the production of milk. It's good for economic activity. It's good for individual farmers that are involved in that. And the type of system that we run here in Ireland, which is a grass-based system, very different than what you get in other countries. A derogation is more important to the competitiveness and economic viability of that system than it would be to a mainly housed system as you might get in other countries. So there's very good reasons why we would want to have a derogation in this country and why I think it's justified that we should have one. Obviously, we have to mitigate the impacts of our livestock and our fertiliser on water quality. And while we know that the more livestock, the more potential impact there is, you don't stand still and just, you know, say, well, right, we'll wait for the consequence of that. You try to find solutions and ways that you can mitigate the impact of that. And that's what we've been doing over the last 10, 15 years, trying to find ways that we can farm better from the point of view of both the economic sustainability, but also the water quality and other environmental.
And yet farmers have followed that model, followed that advice, and they find themselves now in a situation where they have taken on debt, huge amounts of debt in some cases, and they are faced now with the new quota, which is going to be nitrate, which is nitrate.
I guess there's a lot of discussion and debate to go on in relation to what happens with the nitrates over the coming months. The viability of a grass-based system will certainly be hampered by if we lost the derogation. I don't think we're in that territory yet. We will have to just, I guess, figure out how best to manage in whatever situation faces us in the future.
And just finally, 75% of your budget is funded by the taxpayer. And you have a remit not just for economic competitiveness, you've excelled in that regard, particularly when it comes to dairy, but also to support sustainable farming and the environment. It's intrinsic in your remit. The Chagas Authority meets every month and there are 11 members on it. They're there to guide the strategic direction of Chagas. And according to your website, 5 of them are dairy farmers. And one is the director of a company that sources, produces and sells a range of commodity fertilisers. Does that serve the public interest? Do you think that's appropriate now and going into the future?
Look, the way the Chagas Authority set up is set out in our statutes, and 4 farm organisations have nominations to the board, and the minister then appoints them. And
but is it appropriate?
They're well able to defend themselves, but those farmers that are there are representing a broad suite of farmers. You know, they're not just representing the enterprise which they happen to come from themselves. So I think they're very effective at representing the whole community of farmers. I think it actually is a good idea to have farmer representatives on the board. Like, we are, you know, we work very, very closely with farmers. They're our key stakeholders. We have over 40,000 farmer clients. We've over 4,000 students going to our ag colleges. So
indeed, but a director of a company that sells fertilisers?
It's very clear to any of the directors on or members of the Chagas Authority, they have to leave their business interests outside. And when they're in Chagas, it's very clear that they represent the best interests of Chagas. So I've no doubt that all of them do that, and that they're very conscious of that, of the need to do that when they're going about their Chagas business.
That was Frank O'Mara, the head of Chagas, talking to me earlier.